From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Open lines this hour. I'll give you the numbers in just a moment. Next hour, our special on 9/11 begins. By the way, very nice to see many of you in San Jose at this past weekend's Bay Area UFO Expo. I really enjoyed meeting you. We had a great time. Absolute wonderful time. Actually, it was in Santa Clara, but San Jose, that's where we spent a lot of time. Some quick news. The crew of the International Space Station welcomed Atlantis's six astronauts on board Monday after the space shuttle arrived carrying the first new addition for the orbiting laboratory in more than 3.5 years. The hatch between two orbiting spacecraft was opened more than an hour and a half hours after Atlantis Commander Brent Jett ease the space shuttle into the station's docking port at 6:48 a.m. Eastern Time. The shuttle's nearly two-day trip from Earth ended as the two vehicles were passing about 220 miles above the southeastern part of the Pacific Ocean. So far, everything seems to be going okay. A magnitude 6 earthquake in the Gulf of Mexico sent shockwaves through an area from Louisiana to southwest Florida. No damage reported. The earthquake, centered about 260 miles southwest of Tampa, was too small to trigger a tsunami or dangerous waves. The United States Geological Survey received more than 2,800 reports from people all over the area who felt the quake. Scientists said it was the largest and most widely felt of more than a dozen earthquakes recorded in the eastern Gulf of Mexico in the last 30 years. In Tennessee, a man asleep, just picture this, he's asleep on his enclosed porch. He's killed when a pickup truck smashes through his house. 57-year-old Chuck Fincham had dozed off on a couch around 6:30 p.m. on Sunday when a truck driven by Edward Smith, a 56-year-old, ran off the road in front of Fincham's house. The truck struck a large tree in the yard before ramming into the structure. He was dead at the scene. Americans took part in silent reflection and fresh mourning Monday, 5 hours after the September 11, 2001 terror attacks that killed 2,973 people. President Bush capped the day by addressing the nation Monday night from the Oval Office after attending tributes at the World Trade Center, Pentagon, and the crash site of United Flight 93 in Pennsylvania. In his speech, the president honored the heroism of ordinary Americans who responded to the worst terrorist attacks in U.S. history. The president also appealed to Americans to not waver in the face of the ongoing war on terror. I'm going to do this in memory of those who died that day. In radio, silence seems to be a long time. I am going to pause for 5 seconds to give each and every one of you just a moment to think and reflect for those people who died on that very tragic day on 9/11. God rest all their souls. On the eve of the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, former Iranian President Mohammad Khatami condemned Osama bin Laden and suicide bombings. In a 30-minute speech given under tight security at Harvard University, Khatami repeatedly praised the concept of democracy, but said that American politicians since World War II have been infatuated with world domination. Khatami, who spoke in Farsi, that's what they talk in Iran, that's their tongue, had his speech relayed through a translator. He said that he was one of the first world leaders to condemn the barbarous acts of 9/11. Responding to a question from the audience about bin Laden, Khatami said that he had two problems with the al-Qaeda leader behind the attacks. First, because of the crimes he conducts, and second, he said, because he conducts them in the name of Islam, the religion which he says is peace and justice. Al-Qaeda's number two man, though, Ayman al-Zawahiri, condemned the United Nations peacekeepers in Lebanon as enemies of Islam and warned the terror group will strike the Persian Gulf and in Israel, suggesting new fronts in its war against the West. This was released in a video marking, of course, the fifth anniversary of 9/11. Al-Qaeda released a string of videos for the anniversary. One video showed images of the plane striking the World Trade Center. They tried to lionize the 19 suicide hijackers as men who changed history. The weekend after the 9/11 terror attacks, Vice President Dick Cheney appeared on the talk show Meet the Press, and he declared that the world shifted that Tuesday. Well, he was right about that. The attacks had fundamentally changed the federal government's duties for the long haul, he said. As second in command of the country, Cheney's role also changed on that day. With the national security and foreign affairs rising to the top of the government's agenda, the former Wyoming congressman helped shape policies in the aftermath of the terror attacks in a way that has led political analysts to call him the most powerful vice president in American history. He was already an extraordinarily significant vice president even before 9/11, and 9/11 turned an important vice presidency into a historic one, according to John Pitney, a political scientist at Claremont McKenna College, who worked as a congressional fellow for Cheney in 1984. Some interesting things came out, though, on that Tuesday morning with Dick Cheney. In the basement of the White House, in a secure section, he had secure communications with the FAA, Air Force One, the CIA, and the Departments of State, Justice, and Defense. He said that one of the toughest reports would be in decisions was whether to shoot down a hijacked plane full of passengers if it posed a threat. Cheney said the president made the decision on the vice president's recommendation. And according to Pitney, and listen to this, he says Cheney was the one who relayed the order to shoot down Flight 93. That was an extraordinarily significant role for a vice president to play. I haven't heard that before. We've heard rumors that that flight was shot down, but it's very interesting to see this in print coming from a political scientist. Well, in a moment, we're going to be talking with a very respected presidential and constitutional scholar. His name is Joel Goldstein. In just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Joel Goldstein is one of the most highly respected presidential and constitutional scholars in American legal education. Currently, he's writing a book about the relationship between the presidency and the U.S. Supreme Court. He is a law professor at St. Louis University. Professor Goldstein has written widely on the vice presidency, consulted on vice presidential selection, and is frequently interviewed on the subject. He's our guest for a few moments here on Coast to Coast. Hello, Professor. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, too. A couple things about the vice presidency, and of course the strength now of Dick Cheney. But I had not heard this Pitney quote before, that it seems like we did shoot down that flight. Had you seen that before, comment?
I don't think that was quite what he was saying. I think what he was saying, and which is true, is that Vice President Cheney gave an order to shoot down commercial aircraft if they came into Washington, D.C. and wouldn't divert. It turned out that they didn't have to shoot down the planes, but the vice president did give the order to do that.
So, which makes it even more confusing, I would guess.
Right, and actually, it was a little bit more confusing than that. Even there was some suggestion that the vice president may have given the order without getting authorization from the president. One of the president's aides asked the vice president to reconfirm with President Bush that he had that authority.
Joel, so many people say that the real president is Dick Cheney because of just his vice presidential strength. How accurate do you think that is?
Well, I think that's an overstatement. I think that that Vice President Cheney has been more influential than any other vice president, I think in part because of the president's style of leadership but I think that that President Bush ultimately makes the decisions and bears the responsibility.
What makes this vice president so strong as opposed to other vice presidents?
He's been involved with all the most significant issues before the country in a major way. I mean, he really led the transition. He populated the executive branch with people who he knew and who he had good relationships with. And because the president has had a little bit of a chairman of the board approach to governing, the vice president really has run the government to an extent with sort of all spokes leading to him. on every significant issue.
There's not much talk of Dick Cheney running for the presidency on the next go-round. Do you think he will?
No, I think he's made it pretty clear that that's not something he plans to do, and I think he hasn't been a particularly effective politician, and it's a little bit difficult to see him being very successful in the primaries or in a general election on his own.
How would you rate his popularity with the American people?
Well, I mean, the polls tend to indicate that his approval rating and his favorability ratings are pretty low, below the ratings that the president's had. And that they've been going really steadily down since 2004.
Well, now, why would that be? Do you think most people blame him for some of the ills of the nation? Some of the people blame him for the way we've handled terrorism? For his numbers to be lower than the president, shouldn't they generally echo each other?
I think that there often is a close relationship. I mean, I think that there's a number of factors. One is that he's been heavily associated with some of the programs that have been very unpopular in the administration, or that haven't been particularly successful, the war in Iraq, the torture policy, the eavesdropping, and so forth. I think that the incident where he was in the hunting accident, I think, was one that led him to be sort of held up to derision. I think because he's not running for office, he hasn't really done the things to try and reinforce or protect his own popularity. He really doesn't make a lot of public appearances, and he's just really not particularly good at it, and doesn't really seem to be as interested in that part of the job. Unlike most politicians.
Joel, why was he selected? Because most of the time when a vice president is picked by a president or his staff and others, advisors, they need to shore up a section that they think is weak for an election. Kennedy and Johnson. Whether that was a good selection or not for Kennedy, who knows? But they needed to shore up parts of Texas and other regions of the South. In this particular case, what did Dick Cheney bring to the table?
Well, I think he brought several things. One was that President Bush, or then Governor Bush, really hadn't had any experience in foreign policy and defense policy or in Washington, D.C., and Dick Cheney had about the best resume of anybody around, having been a leader in the House of Representatives, having been chief of staff to President Ford at the age of 34, and having been Secretary of Defense. So he brought a lot of credibility in that way. Second is that he was extremely popular with the right wing of the Republican Party, and I think Governor Bush wanted to really shore his position up with the Republican base so that he could move a little bit to the center. Recall he ran as a compassionate conservative. And then I think the third thing is that whenever you pick a vice presidential candidate, you start off with sort of an ideal that you want, and then you pick somebody out of the real people that you have available. And had he taken somebody else, it would have brought certain problems with it. I mean, for instance, had he taken Governor Ridge, he'd have had the problem that Governor Ridge was pro-choice. That would have been unpopular with the Republican base. Had he taken Senator Danforth, it would have been unpopular with the Republican right. So that Dick Cheney really, in some ways, although I think he was chosen because of the credibility he brought in terms of governing, I think he also brought certain political advantages that have been underemphasized.
He's been perceived as a warmonger. He has been perceived as probably one of the main reasons that this administration continues to fight and go to war. What's your perception of this, Joel? I mean, you have looked at this vice presidency for a long time now. Is this a warmonger vice president, and is he pushing that agenda with our president?
Well, I think he certainly has been one of the people who was pushing the war in Iraq. I think he's certainly been one of the people who has been pushing expanding executive power. And I think he's certainly been one of the people who believes that the United States has to do more, in his phrase, in the dark side, in terms of secrecy and so forth. And he tends not to be as concerned about civil liberties as perhaps some other people do.
Do you believe that there is a conflict of interest with his involvement in the past with Halliburton and the way that Halliburton has been getting these no-bid deals?
You know, that's not something I've really looked at, and so I really couldn't say about that. But I think that there's been the perception that he's been much more favorable towards big business. And you recall at the beginning, the first major assignment he had in the administration was developing the energy policy of the administration, and he was criticized in some circles because of the secrecy that took place in the sense that big business was heavily represented and environmental and public citizen groups were not.
In your opinion, would George Bush's presidency be better off with or without Cheney?
You mean from the beginning or right
I would
now?
Say even at this point. At this point.
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, I think he exercises a lot of influence, and I think there's probably some reason to think that his influence is somewhat diminished. I think that at this point he has a certain amount of baggage that I think is probably hurts the president. He's not as effective in some circles as he once was. So I think in that way he's a bit of a drag.
If Dick Cheney called you up, a professor, and said that, Joel, come on over to my office here and tell me what I need to do to increase my popularity with the American people, what would you tell him? What would you recommend that he do?
I think the likelihood of that happening is pretty remote.
I would think so too.
I think that that he's made a number of statements predicting what was going to happen with respect to Iraq and other things, and I think that they have turned out not to be true. And I think that that some sort of recognition of that or statement of contrition, I think, would go a long way, I think, towards humanizing him. I think that would certainly be one thing. I think that he tends to be associated on almost every issue with sort of the most strident or extreme position in American politics. I mean, for instance, on issues like the torture legislation or on the eavesdropping or on the detention and interrogation policy, he tends to be take a much more extreme position than people like Senator McCain or Specter, Graham, Warner, people in the Republican Party. And I think a second thing that he might do is try and moderate on some of those issues.
Seems to have a cavalier attitude, almost an elitist attitude, which I think could be also one of those reasons why his poll figures are so low.
Well, I think he's somebody who has been enormously successful in terms of the positions that he's achieved, both in political life and governmental life and in business. I think he's made a lot of money, and I think he's a person who has an awful lot of confidence in himself and his judgment. And I think that was part of the reason why on 9/11 he was so prepared to really take charge in the White House that day. But I also think that perhaps he hasn't backed off some of the positions that he's taken.
In your opinion, did they know, did the vice president's office know about the strong possibilities of 9/11 before it happened?
I mean, I have no knowledge of, about that. I mean, apparently the president, the vice president, had some intelligence that suggested that they need to pay more attention to terrorism and the possibility of some sort of a strike taking place. But I haven't seen anything that indicates that they knew of anything specific. It's pretty inconceivable that they knew that something was going to happen and let it happen.
Joel, thanks for just giving us a little update on the vice presidency. We may summon you again as we get close to the next election and see how things go, okay?
Well, thanks for inviting
thanks.
Me.
Thanks. Joel Goldstein, he's a professor of law at St. Louis University. Now, I'll be back in a moment. We've got open lines for you for the rest of this half hour before our 9/11 special begins next hour. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, that is open and ready for you right now at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And we'll be back with open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, when our 9/11 special begins, a number of guests will be talking about their own perspective, their own views, and I'm very interested in finding out why they think the way they think on some of the issues that we're going to be talking about tonight. Let's go to our phones. Wildcard line, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there, and where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles, and this is Andrea.
Well, welcome to the show.
Hi. I was searching on Google on my computer, and I came across the great alternative car race around the world from New York City to Paris, and they have $1 million prize, and I wonder if anybody heard about that.
Now, what do you mean by the alternative car race? Different kind of fuel, electricity? What are they doing?
A whole combination, electric cars. I'm a bit nervous. And biodiesel.
Okay, so, you know, the matter of fact, there's a plant in Carthage, Missouri that makes diesel fuel out of turkey parts.
Oh.
Yeah, they do. I mean, come Thanksgiving, they make a fortune. Now, how are they going to get from New York to Paris?
That's the thing on the website. It didn't say how they were going to get.
Are these flying cars? Are these flying? They must be.
I wondered if anybody else heard about it, and it's supposed to be a repeat of the 1908 around the world car race, and I'm wondering if were they going to put pontoons on it?
I don't know. The winner seems like it's not going to be the fastest car; it's going to be the fastest boat. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate you being on the program. First time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning. Good evening.
Hello, George. This is Tom in Southern California.
Hi,
listening
Tom.
On Streamlink.
Lots of calls from California already.
Hey, I want to talk about the Houdini afterlife experiment. Have you ever seen the document that Mrs. Houdini signed that said that it worked?
I had heard about that. I have not seen the document.
Well, you and Deborah Bloom were talking about William James, and the subject of Houdini came up.
Yes.
And you two inspired me to do some research on that. So I put in a lot of time, and I wrote an essay. And I put that document in the essay, and I emailed it to you today. I used your Streamlink email.
Okay, so it's there waiting for me.
And the subject says Houdini's afterlife experiment.
Now, let's just brief us a little bit so everybody is up to snuff here on this. What happened? Right before Houdini died, he told his wife, Bess, we need to set up a system so we know there's an afterlife, some kind of a code. So you pick it up from there.
Yes, it's a pretty complicated code. Once it's decoded, it's very simple. It's Roosevelt's believe. That's the decoded message. But the actual message is like 10 words long. Plus, you have to have these special words and the decoding algorithm.
And now she went to a number of mediums, right?
Actually, the medium had a message delivered first from Houdini's mother to a client that was just getting a reading.
What was that message?
The word forgive, which was the word that Harry Houdini went to all those mediums trying to hear. And all he found were fake mediums because he was a magician and he was able to see through their tricks.
He was very frustrated, too, with them, wasn't he?
He was very frustrated, but he very much wanted to talk to his mother, yet he passed away before he could get that message delivered.
So you think Bess found the right medium eventually?
The medium found her because the message came to the medium saying,
right,
take this message to Mrs. Houdini. And so they were able to get together and deliver the message, and she signed this document. It's a fascinating story, and I cover it in the essay. And if you like it, we could probably chat about it for an hour on the first
hour. All right.
First hour.
Make sure you send it to my normal email address as well, would you?
I will do that. I also have an ESP game that people can download from the internet and play with their friends, and I'd like to send you a copy of that, too.
Please do so. We'll take a look at it. I'll even play around with it. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning. Hi there.
Hi. Good morning, George. This is Kelly Lazat from Jacksonville, Florida.
Sure. Welcome to the show, dear.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's nice to talk to you. I had a question I wanted to run by you, an interesting situation. My ex-husband's name was Todd, and everybody used to call him Scott by accident. He told me about it because when we started dating, I accidentally called him Scott, and he told me his whole life people have been mistaking him and calling him Scott, even after they've known him. And I was actually out many times where we introduced our names, and later on in that evening, somebody would refer to him as Scott, and I've seen it with my own eyes. And I wanted to know what your feedback was on that.
Well, first of all,
how is that possible?
First of all, it's the kiss of death for a guy when his girlfriend calls him by another name.
Oh, Scott.
And that's not his name.
I didn't mean it, but it just came out. I don't even know where it came from, but I've seen it. And I wanted to know if you heard anything like that or maybe.
Well, you know, then it's also possible that, you know, he was a Scott in another life.
Maybe he was. I never thought of that.
So, but he didn't get upset when you called him Scott?
No. Actually, he turned to me and he said, you know, people have been mistaking me my whole life and calling me Scott. So I guess that's why he didn't get upset, because it wasn't a...
Lucky you.
I know, right? I picked a good name.
So tell me, did you really know a guy named Scott?
I didn't. I've never dated a Scott.
Okay. I believe you.
Okay.
And he believes you. That's all that matters.
Yes, that's all that matters.
Okay. Yeah, it could have been. It could have been some kind of reincarnation, I think. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi, George. This is Gary from Enterprise, Oregon.
Hey, Gary.
I was going to stick up for the vice president there a little bit. You know, during the Clinton administration, they used Halliburton just as much as this administration has, because it's one of the only companies in the world that can do everything that they do. The other one, I think, is a French company, and we don't exactly see eye to eye with them. So I can't see our money, you know, going to France.
Yeah, but I still would have liked, and you're right about that, but I still would have liked to have seen some bids.
And I'd vote for Dick Cheney for president. I think he's one of the smartest men I've ever heard talk.
You really would? I don't think he'd win.
Oh, well.
Do you? Honestly.
I think the polls are really wrong, because every election now for the past 20 years with the Democrats and Republicans going at it tooth and nail, they've been wrong. They're always skewed to the Democratic side, and they've been wrong on every election. So I don't believe the polls anymore. I think they're just like the press. They can be swayed. If you take a political science class, you can learn how to do it, you know, in a college.
What do you think of all these rumors that the old electronic boxes were tampered with?
Well, I think they probably could be tampered with. I don't trust them. I've heard that lady you've had on your show that watches that sort of thing.
Yeah, Bev Harris.
You know, and I guess some of these companies are from Canada, and a lot of them are backed by ex-political people. You know, they've invested their money into these companies.
Yeah.
It's big business.
Matter of fact, when we get close to the mid-election in November, I'm going to bring Steve Freeman on, who's written a book about the black box voting in the polls, and a very fascinating theory he has with some heavy hitter pollsters that he has interviewed. You're going to find that to be fascinating. We'll do that a little bit later on. Let's continue with open lines, and then next hour our very special 9/11 program begins. And, you know, very, very touching day, I think, for all of us here in America, no matter how you feel about 9/11. As you know, a couple polls released over the last several weeks, one says that 36% believes that the government knew something was happening or was indeed even a part of it. And then the numbers jumped in an MSNBC poll that jumped to 44% that said the same thing, where 43% said, no way, but 14% of the people just said, I simply don't know. But what is, I think, remarkable and somewhat disconcerting is the fact that so many people are divided on this issue. I sure think it would be nice to have it all on one side or another, but man, to be polarized right down the middle is pretty stressful for a lot of people. The views of the individuals who will be coming on this program tonight, which will include various people with their own theories. I am also very interested in why they think the way they think. Not necessarily just what they're going to say, but why do they have to feel that way? And then in the last hour of the program, we'll have time for a little interview with Howard Bloom on his take on all this, trying to balance this out as much as we can. And then I've got open lines for you at the end of the program, because I'm going to ask you a specific question as it relates directly to 9/11. And that'll be in the last hour of the show here on Coast to Coast. Back to the phones we go. Let us go to our next wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I had a comment that I wanted to make that the professor made, and also something that your last caller made.
Are you Sylvia Brown, by any chance?
No, but you say that to me. I've spoken to you.
Was that you?
Before.
Okay. Oh, you're close. I got to tell you. You are close.
I know. You tell me that all the time. Let me do the last call, because I have that right on my mind. You know, I moved to Florida just before the last election, and I was able to vote down here.
All right.
And they have the computerized voting. And I went, and I know who I hit, and it was for the Democrats. The second I hit Carrie Edwards' name, Bush Cheney lit up. So I thought, oh, I did something wrong. I did it again. I did it three times. Finally, I called somebody over, and I said, you know, something's wrong with this machine. So he said to me, well, here's a pencil. Try it with a pencil. Tried it with the pencil. Same result. Hit Carrie Edwards, Bush Cheney lit up.
And I guess before you had to push another button to enter it, right?
Yes, but which I was smart enough at least not to do it.
Exactly, yeah.
And I called him back over again. And I said, there's something wrong with this machine.
Now, did he come into the election booth and look at this with you?
It wasn't a booth. It was a line of computers.
Okay.
In a room. And they had somebody in the middle. They were like two rows.
So could people look over your shoulder and see what you were
actually
doing?
Actually, they could, yeah.
Huh.
Actually,
well,
they could.
There goes that privacy.
I know. Well, there was absolutely no, but it's not like they all close the curtain and get in.
Yeah, I miss those.
But I had, like I said, I had done it several times. And after this happened again, he gave me the pencil. I called him back, and I said, there's something wrong with this machine.
So why don't you move over to another computer?
Well, he came back, and he jiggled the computer. I did it again, and it took the vote as I wanted. Now, I'm in Florida. I got a lot of senior citizens down here. And I'm guaranteeing you that if they thought they pushed Carrie Edwards and that was the button, they went and entered it without realizing that it popped up to Bush Cheney.
And they just walked away afterwards, thinking they voted for the people they wanted
exactly
to vote for.
But that's not really the reason I called you. Your professor made a comment. You asked him about whether you thought that Cheney would run for
president.
You know, my whole theory is that I think that Cheney and Rumsfeld were placed in there. And George W. is the one that's the figurehead.
You may be right.
And what's your group?
The Illuminati?
The Illuminati.
Well, not my group. I'm not part of them.
No, the group that you talk about.
Yeah, the Illuminati, the elitists.
And I really believe that Cheney and Rumsfeld are part of the Illuminati. And I think that Bush is just their figurehead, like Queen Elizabeth.
There are a lot of people who believe exactly that.
Okay, well, that's all I wanted to say.
All right.
Okay, George.
Good talking to you, Sylvia, or whoever you may be. Now, you do. She sounds just like Sylvia Brown. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hey, good evening.
Hey, hi.
Hello, it's wonderful to talk to you, George.
Thank you.
I'm in Tucson, Arizona, and my name is Brenda. And I was calling about the 911 thing.
Yeah.
But kind of, sort of, it ties into these movies I've been watching.
Now, how
so? It's with the, oh, gosh. My mind is going blank. I'm nervous. I'm sorry.
These were like
Dean Radin and
like 9/11 movies?
No, it's, oh my God, I gotta look. No, they're not 9/11 movies.
New releases?
Oh, hang on.
Well, you're just jammed with information today.
I really apologize.
Thanks for calling the show.
No, wait. What the bleep?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Down the rabbit hole?
Yeah. What the bleep?
Yes.
Do we know?
Yes, but then there's further ones down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, there's a couple others like
yes.
that.
Yes, and they are awesome. And I have a son that's going into, well, he's in University of Arizona, and he's going into, he's getting a dual major in astronomy and physics.
Well, good for him.
But the point is, today, everybody I talk to around here had a terrible day.
What do you mean by a terrible day?
Everything was going really bad, and I started thinking about that, and I thought
this is,
about the mass consciousness.
Yeah, this is a negatively charged day. I mean, unfortunately, but
it just is. And you see it happening all around. And it was really, I don't know, it was kind of mind-boggling, and I thought, oh, my gosh. You know, that's totally true.
Yep, very solemn, and I think that affects a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, down to grassroots.
Yep.
And
I
just
that.
Wanted to share that. That was it.
Well, that's
and
a good observation.
Thought, you know, and I would love if you could get those people from What the Bleep on there.
They wanted to come on before the movie went out, and I told them let's wait a couple years and let's get it established. Not a couple, at least a year, and let's see where it is. So maybe we'll bring it in because it's kind of like a cult movie now.
Well, a little bit, but I've shared it with so many people, and I'm a quite Catholic, but it's really made me think, and I had already been thinking about things, and it just speaks so true to so many things.
Okay. Well, thanks, and keep listening.
Well, thank you, and have a great evening.
Okay. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, good evening, George. Appreciate you taking the call.
Sure, thanks.
Will from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
This is such a day for us to reflect, and I think there's quite an opportunity here. I think that you call it the Illuminati, I call it a false elite. Jefferson called it the false era story and the real Antichrist. I mean, it's a socioeconomic, genealogical, political system.
Sure.
That the Whigs recognized, Adams, Tom Paine, Jefferson wrote about it when we founded this country. Their ideals are embedded in our three mottos. That anybody who really wants to understand who built this country can really recognize what the blueprint is for being a true American. But the hole in the Pentagon just simply doesn't work for Boeing 757. And there are plenty of senators and congressmen who were on the cable network TV shows that night of the 2001 September 11th talking about the airplane that swept up over the Capitol. The approach path was Columbia Pike, and that's collinear with the Pentagon. That dead ends in the Pentagon. And if you do a Google map or a map quest, and you can see that Columbia Pike is collinear with the U.S. Capitol and the Pentagon. That's the way the area is laid out.
So you don't think the big one hit that one?
Well, no. It's not about thinking. It's about just having common sense and recognizing that a punch in a hole through three rings of the Pentagon. This reinforced steel concrete building where the two 8-ton, 13-foot diameter Rolls-Royce jet engines made no mark on the limestone facade of the building at 400 or 500 miles an hour is just simply not tenable from a physical, empirical standpoint, as well as the free fall rate of the World Trade Center and Building 7. When you can see the squibs, you can see the lateral explosions blowing steel and concrete out hundreds of feet laterally.
Well, that's one of the things we are going to be talking about when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. The 9/11 special begins in a moment.